Good afternoon.
Hello.
I'm here with Dr. Lynn Snow. Lynn has been doing some work into post-adoption depression, which affects some adoptive parents, and you'll go on to tell us a bit about other people, potentially too. And we know that it can have really devastating effects for that period post-placement. And we've had serious case reviews in safeguarding in the UK where this was a theme. Lynn's recently been doing some work with the Churchill Fellowship, which allows her to study how different adoption agencies are teaching about PAD and identifying it and the supporting adopters through it. So welcome, Lynn. Do you want to tell us about yourself and how you came to be doing this piece of work?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Jane. So yes, I'm a paediatrician, that's a children's doctor. I'm designated doctor for looked after children in Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland. And that's a strategic level role, but also I'm a frontline clinician, so I see children for their health assessments as they come into care. The element of the Churchill Fellowship was I saw an advert and I applied and was shortlisted and interviewed. And to look, my application was based around looking specifically at post-adoption depression and what we could learn from other countries, because it's a travel fellowship that allows you to travel, so that we could bring that back to the UK and perhaps adjust what we're our practices here to try and improve what we're doing. As you said, Jane, sadly, the children that were impacted through the serious case reviews, I felt that we could our practices could improve.
That's really interesting. If we bring that back to the UK, what have you learned about how PAD is approached in this country and how agencies work with their adopters?
So the focus of my research obviously is overseas, but I have had quite a lot of conversations with different people around the UK. And I think my response to that would be that practice is quite variable. Agencies know about post-adoption depression, which is great. I don't think we could have said that 10 or 15 years ago. So they are aware of it. They are talking about it with their adopters. But how much they're talking about it depends on both the agency and on different practitioners. Some have incredibly good practice, and I think based in their own experiences, which leads them to change what they do. But there are leaflets, there are videos that are used, and in one place they said they gave their adopters homework to very much specifically look at this topic. So that they could then talk about it as part of the home study. Yeah. So variable, and I think potential for ensuring that is more standardised across.
And built into the preparation of adopters. Absolutely. As well as waiting for that post-adoption support phase.
Very definitely, yes.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about practitioners or friends and family of somebody where they've had a child placed with them recently, what would be the common signs for them to look out for that might indicate that somebody's struggling with post-adoption placement?
The signs can be quite variable, obviously. They depend from person to person. Some people have much more kind of physical symptoms. So they may be complaining of unexpected aches and pains, recurrent tummy problems, headaches, just kind of chronic fatigue, a change of appetite. But then there are also the sort of slightly more what we would talk about emotional based responses, where there might be lack of concentration, people become forgetful, they have a reduction in pleasure, just not wanting to do things, not wanting to engage, a sudden rise in anxiety, and people talk about feeling inadequate and then doubting their decision to become a parent.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of quite fundamental to their sort of self-belief. But it's really important to note that it doesn't matter if you're male or female, it doesn't matter if you're the primary carer or the secondary carer, you don't have to have had preceding mental health problems, and it can be adoption. And some of the studies are beginning to suggest that it can also impact on others who are taking on permanent care through other means, such as our kinship carers as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, need to be aware of it for a whole range of people.
And do we know why it happens then?
There's been lots of research looking at different variables and trying to say, is it because you had depression in the past? And as I've said, that hasn't held to be true. Where the research is headed is that it appears to be based around unmet expectations. So in the pre-adoptive phase, creating expectations about what it will be like to be an adoptive parent, and those expectations not being met, and that causing kind of a psychological disconnect for that person. Yeah. And as I mentioned earlier, that sense of loss of self-esteem because you're not meeting your own expectations as a parent. And then there will be expectations in the child. So on paper, having read about a child and having potentially kind of created this picture, and the reality of then living with that child being very, very different. So around unmet expectations, potentially also the idea of that attachment to that child not happening immediately.
Yeah.
I think the expectation is I'll fall in love with them, I'll be the perfect parent, but actually things take time, and sometimes I'm not the perfect parent, and I need to be kind to myself around that. So that's where the main theories seem to be lying. At the
moment. There are a lot of parallels with postnatal depression, actually, but presumably without the hormonal physiological changes.
Yes, there are a lot of parallels, but I think there are some kind of some unique pressures for adoptive parents and for kinship parents. The idea of sometimes the child's trauma, reigniting traumas that adopters may have been through themselves, maybe through fertility, with kinship carers, it could be intergenerational trauma. So those are some of the sort of unique elements that we need to be considering. So whilst it's akin to postnatal depression, I think there is a unique set of circumstances as well.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So how can health and social work professionals work together to identify where people might be vulnerable to post-adoption depression?
It's really important that health and social care work together. I think there is a bit of a tendency for adoption to be the realm of the adoption agency and therefore the social workers. But actually, there is a really important role for health. Initially, obviously, in the preparation around the adoption medical advisors and their medical advice that they write as adopters are being assessed, and thinking about the Cumbria recommendations that the mental health of the applicants of the adopters needs to be revisited at points of transition. And I think that's a really helpful way of kind of looking at it, because we know that those points of transition are when there is more pressure for people. So that's absolutely vital. I think all professionals who are in contact with that family need to be aware of the risks and what the elements are that are at play for that family. So that would include GPs, because obviously people might go to their GP seeking support because it's outside of their social care and home study assessment sort of element. And so we need GPs to be aware, and maybe there's a role for social care in supporting GPs to understand adoption and permanency and the impact. And trying not to preempt the findings of my study, but I'm quite keen that health visitors play a bigger role. They have a unique role that they go in and visit families. And at the moment, they will do new birth visits and look specifically at postnatal depression. And I really would like to see some equity for created families through different models, so that be adoption or kinship. So that's something I'm wanting to work on as part of the findings of the study.
Yeah, I can see that would be a valuable input. I mean, when you refer to the Cumbria Review, there was a multi-agency group put together to look at the findings from that really sad case, and I know that part of that was to try and support GPs in learning about what we do with the information as social services, what we do with that information that they give to us, and the importance of maintaining that up-to-date connection, because those three cases all have very similar situations. So how do we support adopters in that post-placement phase to prevent breakdown? of placements, because we do know that some of these placements sadly get to the point where adopters or prospective adopters can no longer cope and the child has to return to care.
Yes, I think it's very much about being proactive.
Okay.
I think if workers are conscious of the emotional impact of the placement on carers, and sort of proactively looking for changes in their mental health, I think that's, you know, certainly the first step. I think we need to remove the stigma. We need to be saying that this happens.
Yeah.
And it happens in about, depending on which study you read, between 10 and 15% of adopters have, you know, low mood, not necessarily to the point of full depression. So yes, removing the stigma, saying it happens, and going back to that theory I was talking about around unmet expectations, helping people reframe those expectations. So instead of the belief, I need to be the perfect parent,
yeah,
it's I need to be the best parent I can be, but I need to be gentle on myself when if things go wrong and learn from mistakes. I think the, again, going back to that theory around unmet expectations of other people, I think the friends and family training that a lot of agencies have now undertake is really helpful. So
using family network days.
Yes. And it'll be called different things in different places to prevent those comments, those unhelpful comments where, you know, a friend or a carer might say, but you've always wanted this, why are you feeling so miserable?
Yes.
So because if they have a better understanding of what the pressures are around adoption, then they would be able to better support. And I think also encouraging our health professionals, and that would include myself and my colleagues, to be more adoption aware. I know in the States, for example, they have a curriculum that mental health professionals can undertake to help them understand about adoption and the needs of adoptive families. So I think it would be really, really good to have something like that here in the UK.
Yeah, sounds really good. So you're going to the States in July. What are you hoping to learn or anticipating to bring back?
Well, that's the key, really. I think it's the wanting to bring it back. So I chose to go to the States because the first ever article that described in literature post-adoption depression was back in 1995 in the States. And then there was a whole swathe of research, some seminal research by a Professor Foley, based in the States. So very much wanted to go there, thinking that they'd had the research in place for quite a long time. And surely, you know, they must have moved research into practice and there would be some really good practice out there. It's actually been really hard work to track that down. But I have found a couple of adoption agencies where they certainly have policy in place, both for training their workers, training their adopters, and then to screen their adopters using what we call the Woolley questionnaire, which is used for postnatal depression in the UK. So it's exactly the same, but they're using it for adopters.
Sounds good.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm really hoping I'm going to go out and meet all these people, learn much more about their practices, and then hopefully be able to bring some of that back and challenge the UK practice.
Excellent. That sounds really good. So are you still looking for practice examples from the UK? Can our members get in touch with you if they want to share their experiences with you?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the more examples we get, the better our practice would become in the UK. So examples from other countries outside of the United States. I'm also hoping to visit Denmark and Sweden. But yes, anybody out there who's got other examples, then yes, please do let me know. And you can get in contact with me through my NHS.net email.
Thank you, Lynn. That sounds really interesting. Really look forward to hearing your findings. And hopefully we'll begin to put together a learning from research for us at some point in the future as well, so we'll have you back to talk about your findings.
I'd love to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hope it all goes well. And for those of our members who are interested in post-adoption support, we've got a conference coming up, which is an in-person conference here at the Coram campus, and it's on the 11th of March, and that's looking at contemporary insights into post-adoption support, when it should be quite a good day and good practice guide Assessment Support for Adopted Children and Their Families in England by Dr. John Simmons and Caroline Thomas is going to be launched at that event, and people can book in through the website.